This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. eHealth Radio gives you the most current health information, news, and advice featuring some of the leading innovators in healthcare and wellness who are changing healthcare as we know it. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. Today we are speaking with Dr. Mark Mofeed, a plastic surgeon and founder of Mark Mofeed MD, FACS Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery, located in La Jolla, California, just north of San Diego. He is here to share with us information on what is going on these days in the field of plastic surgery. Dr. Mofeed, a pleasure to have you with us today on the program.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hey, good morning to you, and thanks for your time. So, Dr. Mofeed, I've been told that you have conducted extensive research about the shape of the female body. Can you tell us more about your research and findings?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We talk about the golden mean in Greek architecture, and there is this concept or this idea that there are certain aesthetic norms or norms of what we consider to be beautiful, whether it's the facial skeleton, the shape of the eyes and the eyebrows. And I was interested in knowing whether there was such a golden mean, if you will, as there is in Greek architecture with the human body, and specifically with the female silhouette. Now, most people recognize that shapeliness is a positive attribute. And for many years, I've had patients that tell me that they want to have a narrower waist and wider hips. And we do that through a combination of techniques, liposuction, tummy tucks, excisional procedures, in some cases gluteal implants or fat grafting to the buttocks. And so I decided to look at this sort of pseudoscientifically, both non-scientifically and scientifically, by assigning the task of going through a database of Playboy centerfolds to a member of my office staff. And so this information is actually readily available. It's available online. So I had a staff member go through and look at every single waist-to-hip ratio that had been published between 1953 and 2012, which is back when I originally started looking at this, starting with Marilyn Monroe all the way up through the end of 2012. And by looking at the waist-to-hip ratios, we found that regardless of body mass index or regardless of weight, that waist-hip ratio was a very preserved number. It was almost always 0.68. So I decided to apply that to my own practice. And when I do surgery and when patients come to me specifically for things like mommy makeovers, I try to narrow the waist and widen the hips through a combination of the techniques that I mentioned to you to try to reapproximate that 0.68. And I really do think it's the golden mean. Since we've written that up, I think a lot of other plastic surgeons have, to some extent, agreed with that. And now I do see that mentioned more regularly, both at meetings as well as in our scientific literature, that there does seem to be this this golden mean of an aesthetic ideal.
And what types of enhancement procedures can women have if they want to achieve this hourglass figure?
Well, there's in plastic surgery, we use a number of different techniques. There's non-invasive techniques, which means that there's, for example, cryolipolysis. Some of you may have heard of that, where we basically freeze the fat. Patients come in, we attach these paddles to the abdomen or to the back or to the lower back area, wherever you'd like to have it done. And over the course of about an hour and perhaps somewhere between 4 and 6 treatments, you can actually freeze the fat. There's other applications that use heat technology as opposed to cryolipolysis or freezing the fat, but the idea is the same. You try to injure the fat in a way, in a deeper layer to the skin, in a way to get it to melt away. I primarily focus on the surgical techniques, and that primarily includes things like liposuction or liposculpture. We can do that through conventional techniques that use standard wetting solutions, or we can use the assistance of lasers. In some cases, we can use ultrasound technology to help us. There is power-assisted technique for liposuction, but for the most part, the techniques all have a common nexus, and that is you injure the fat in a way before you suction it out or remove it. There's also excisional technique. So, for example, women that have had kids, that tummy stretched out, both the skin as well as the muscles. So we go in, we tighten the muscles, and we remove the extra skin and fat, and that's called a tummy tuck. In patients that have had more significant weight loss, we can do something called a body lift or a lower body lift, and that's where we make a donut of tissue disappear off of the tummy, off of the sides, and in the lower back region. The trade-off, obviously, is that there is a scar there. And so we can remove tissue through a combination of those two techniques, non-invasively or invasively through liposuction or cutting the tissue away through the midsection of the body. And in the lower body, for example, in the buttock area, there are a number of different techniques we can use to enhance. The two techniques I primarily rely on involve using some of that liposuction fat as spare parts. We basically filter the fat and purify it and then re-inject it into the buttocks, and that's commonly referred to as a Brazilian butt lift. Or we can actually add a silicone implant. South of the border, basically in Central America and South America, they use silicone gel-filled implants. In the United States and in North America, we primarily use solid silicone implants, so we don't have the option of using gel-filled implants. And I've actually designed a line of buttock implants. We call them the natural contour implant. It's manufactured by a company called Implantec. And I created a technique to implant these that is actually on an instructional video on YouTube. And did this a number of years ago. I did some additional training in Brazil where buttock augmentation really has its roots. And we can place these implants safely within the muscle. So there's a number of different planes that you can actually place these buttock implants. And my favored technique, which I really think is the best technique, is to place these within the gluteus maximus muscle. And so using those two techniques that we described, either fat grafting or a combination of implants with fat grafting or just implants alone in patients that don't have a lot of excess fat to use, we can really improve that silhouette.
It's certainly most informational in there. Now, what is the most popular procedure that your patients come in for, and what is the one that is beginning to be the most popular?
Well, I think that the most popular procedure along the lines of what we've discussed is really what I'd consider to be a mommy makeover. And a mommy makeover historically has entailed a combination of a tummy tuck, to tighten the abdominal wall, and breast surgery to lift the breasts, or in some cases lift the breasts and place an implant, or lift the breasts and reduce them. So this is typically an operation we do on women that are in their mid-30s. They've already, mid to late 30s, I should say, they've already had their kids, or perhaps earlier if they've had their kids and they've decided they're done at however many kids they have in their early 30s. And we do these two procedures almost always hand in hand. So it's a combination of a tummy tuck where we tighten the abdominal wall. We basically reapproximate those abdominal wall muscles, the rectus abdomini muscles that have stretched out and widened through the course of pregnancy and childbirth. And we excise the excess skin in the lower abdomen. Some women are blessed in that they don't have to have that procedure. That skin snaps right back, and they can just have a little bit of liposuction in their tummy, which is an easier operation to recover from, and it's obviously it doesn't require a scar. So for those patients, it is more likely than not that we would just do straight liposuction in the midsection, and that would include the tummy and the lower back area, which I call the flanks. And then I reinject that fat into the buttocks typically. As far as the breasts go, there's a wide range there. Some women want to be smaller after two kids, and, you know, let's say that they've always been a C cup, but now they're large Ds. They'd like to get back to that C cup. We can do a small little breast reduction and lift the breasts to where they used to be. And some women, they're just deflated, and they just need implants. and without a lift, especially if they started out small, if they were A cups or small B cups, and now we can put in an implant, and there's no need to have any additional scars on the breasts, and we can just place implants. So in some cases, it requires implants and a lift, and you know there's a wide variety of what kind of lifts we can and need to do. And then in concert with that, I typically like to address the buttocks. And I think it's a very important part of that female shape for the reasons that I told you earlier. I think it was an often ignored part of the female anatomy to enhance what was lost through childbirth, and that is to either do a Brazilian butt lift, add a little bit of fat back into the backside, or to place some small implants.
Today we are speaking with Dr. Mark Mofeed, a plastic surgeon and founder of Mark Mofeed MD, FACS, Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery, located in La Jolla, California, just north of San Diego, here on eHealth Radio's Plastic Surgery Information Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, Dr. Mofeed, there has been some concern over the safety and effectiveness of certain procedures. What are some things that people should look for when choosing a doctor in these regards?
Well, I think that the most important part of choosing what type of plastic surgery to have is to have a plastic surgeon that shares your aesthetic ideals. And I think that having a board-certified plastic surgeon that is a member of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons and also the American Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons is an important thing, just to establish a benchmark for who you'd like to entrust your life, in their hands with. And it would be the same as it would be with anything else. The kind of house you wind up with after building it is more likely than not related to the architect and the builder. And in this case, the architect and the builder is your plastic surgeon. They're wearing two hats in this. And so they're going to help advise you of what procedures are the right procedures for you. And they're also going to be given the task of making sure that all of the moving parts are safely and effectively carried out. There are certain procedures that are done by, let's call them fringe practitioners, in some cases unlicensed practitioners. Warnings that I would provide would be that, for example, sometimes there are some practitioners that will inject foreign substances into the buttocks or in other body parts, typically free silicone or other types of filler products. And those are almost always to be discouraged. That is a less safe procedure. I mentioned to you that we use fat grafting, and that's a very effective procedure, and it's very safe because in most cases when someone is injected with their own fat, that is something that's very well tolerated. It's their own body tissue, and they're not going to reject it. Now, having said that, I actually published a paper about 6 months ago and presented it at the International Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons in Japan, Kyoto, Japan. And it was also presented at the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, and that has to do with the Brazilian butt lift safety. And what we had found is that a number of practitioners that had been injecting fat back in had run into problems where these small little clusters of fat wound up getting trapped into the circulation and in some cases leading to heart problems, lung problems, and in some cases death. So I studied this very carefully. We looked at almost 200,000 patients and sent out surveys to approximately 600 or 700 surgeons around the world, and did a number of cadaver dissections and worked very closely with other medical professionals, including radiologists and pathologists, and created a task force with over a dozen plastic surgeons and other specialists. And we came to the conclusion that the safest plane, so the safest place to inject this fat, is very carefully on top of the muscle into the surrounding buttock fat. I mentioned to you before that we put buttock implants in the muscle, and it's very important not to inject the fat anywhere near the muscle because there is a very rich and robust blood supply where these small little globules of fat can get trapped into the circulation. And so it was a landmark study, and it's really, I think, changed how we do the surgery for the better. I know that without doubt that this is going to save lives and change lives and just make this as safe of an operation as you would want, you know, to entrust, you know, having one of your own loved ones have this kind of a procedure. So I would say that the best thing to do when looking for a plastic surgeon is to find someone who is a member of the International Society and the National Societies, and to make sure that that surgeon is up to date on the most recent techniques and the most recent literature, because this is a constantly evolving field, as you might expect. There's always things to learn and many things that change, and having someone that is most up to date on these procedures, I think, is the most important thing when choosing that plastic surgeon.
Well, certainly has been good to have had you. Really quite informative and interesting as well. Lastly, can you tell us about some of the latest technology advances and innovations that you've seen in recent years that changed the shape of the industry?
Well, yeah, it's a great question. You know, we're in a high-tech field. Like you said, there are always things that advances and innovations that can improve how we do our surgical procedures. And I would say that in recent years, we have come to recognize that plastic surgeons that are used to basically using the scalpel to accomplish their goals can turn to other things. And for about the last 10 years or so, we've recognized that, for example, Botox, it's a very common neurotoxin, perhaps the most common aesthetic procedure that's done, can be really be used for a number of different things. We now use Botox not just as a wrinkle treatment, but we use it to treat migraine headaches. We use it to stop excess perspiration in the armpits and the hands and the feet. We can use it to shape the face. You know, there are a lot of things that can be done. And outside the field of plastic surgery, Botox also has a number of uses in ophthalmology, in gastroenterology. And it's really sort of fascinating to see what can be done with such a commonly used substance. We also, I think, benefit a lot from the use of fillers. Facial fillers are really a game changer. And this is also something that I think has really changed a lot over the last 5 years, in that, for example, patients that were typically candidates for lower eyelid surgery, blepharoplasty for patients that look like they've got some circles under their eyes and they look tired all the time, rather than treating that surgically, we can actually treat that non-surgically just by injecting a small filler underneath the eyes, the eyelids, between the junction between the cheeks and the lower lids. And these products can last, in some cases, years. I've had patients that for the last 5 or 6 years have had the same fillers injected. They're very safe. They're reversible. If patients don't like them, we can inject an enzyme to break them up. And you can save a patient surgery. So with about a 5 or a 10-minute procedure in the office with virtually no downtime, you can avoid an entire surgical procedure. There are other advances, I think, that are worth mentioning, and that has to do with non-invasive technologies. And these non-invasive technologies can be used. I mentioned earlier that you can use cryolipolysis to freeze the fat. We can also use radiofrequency energy in order to tighten the skin. Lasers have come a long way as well. It used to be that when a patient went to a dermatologist or a plastic surgeon to have a laser procedure, there were weeks, if not months, of downtime where patients looked visibly burned, and it took a long time for that skin to heal. Now we use fractionated technology where it's almost like you're creating little tiny little holes in the skin microscopically, and it's much less injurious to the skin, and it is a much quicker recovery, and in many cases we can get as good, if not better, results over the course of several treatments with virtually no downtime. And so these are just constantly evolving. I think that the addition of non-invasive technologies to the traditional scalpel techniques that we've historically used in plastic surgery are game changers. There are other smaller little additions to how we do things. For example, you know, many women know that there are two types of breast implants, saline implants and silicone gel-filled breast implants. Well, those implant technologies have come a long ways. We now have shaped implants in the shape of teardrops or more anatomically shaped to more approximate the female breast. We also have saline implants now that don't feel like water balloons. They've got little internal structured chambers where you can get a saline or a saltwater implant that feels almost like as good as a silicone implant. So there are a lot of little things that I think cumulatively have really changed this field for the better. And it's just, like I said, this is one of these things where we are lifelong learners in our field of plastic surgery and staying up to date, attending meetings, doing your own research, making sure that you know what looks best on the types of patients that you treat, I think are very important in terms of selecting your plastic surgeon.
Well, certainly has been great to have had you, and you've certainly offered and delivered a lot of information for those that are scouting out plastic surgery in the future or want more information. You certainly gave us plenty to listen to, and can't thank you enough. Where can listeners get further details online on your practice there in La Jolla?
Well, our website address is www.drmofid.com. That's DRMOFID.com. And there's a lot of information available on our website about facial surgery, rhinoplasty, facial implants like cheek implants, brow lifting, facelifting, breast and body contouring surgery. I love doing all of it. The great thing about plastic surgery is that there is so much within our armamentarium of procedures. And that would include things for men like male pectoral implants. There are other more unique niche type things that we do in our practice as well. We have a number of transgendered patients that come to us for things like shaving down the Adam's apple or other things having to do with gender dysphoria. So this is just a fascinating field, and I'm really privileged to be a part of it.
Well, Dr. Mofid, again, we thank you for your time spent with us here today, and hopefully we can get you back on in the future right here on eHealth Radio. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Bye now.
We've been speaking with Dr. Mark Mofid, a plastic surgeon and founder of Mark Mofid MD, FACS Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery, located in La Jolla, California, just north of San Diego. And to learn more, visit drmofid.com. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.